Dr. Joe. I have a PhD in toxicology and 30 years experience in human exposure to pharmaceuticals, to chemical agents, and biologicals. So it's been my life's work keeping people safe and finding better ways to do things. So with that background, I'm a never masker. And I've pointed to the one paper that talks about the 12 base pairs that were inserted into that. That's the furin, the S link, that absolutely proves to me beyond all shadow of a doubt that this is an engineered virus and a bioweapon. Well, I can tell you the difference. In the United States, there's this organization called the FDA that is owned and operated by the pharma lobby.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have Dr. Joe Nieuwsma coming back to the program, and we are going to go through the disinformation, the myths, everything surrounding the lockdown and, you know, masks and numbers and what happened in Wuhan compared to the United States. Is this thing really a virus or an exosome? Do viruses exist? We're going to talk about it all. We made a list of about 20 different myths and disinformation, and maybe not myths, just maybe disinformation, or maybe difference in opinion. I don't know, but we're going to talk about all the different things that we could come up with where there is a potential of disinformation and inaccurate information regarding this situation. I think it's really important to discuss these things, and I hope you agree after listening to this. And I hope you will share this with others, because I think it's really important that this information, even from, you know, is a mask even safe, those things, because people are fearful. And you're going to want to listen to the show on the fact that masks are not what people think they are, especially if they're not N95 masks. They're just like handkerchiefs and things. It's not even working. So we're going to talk about that. And then I want to talk about, I put out an article, actually I reposted an article that was written by Silverman Man, and I found it, and it's about the fact that silver is at a 5,000 human history low. And I'm just telling you, silver is a really, really great buy. Gold is too, it's really low. But silver is used in electronics. They found two different elements in silver that they're developing. So it's going to be even more important for high-tech devices. And now it's at a all-time low in all of human history, kind of low, which is just crazy. And I talked to Andy Scheckman at Miles Franklin, and he told me that if I share with my listeners and you send them an email at andy@milesfranklin.com and you tell them that Sarah sent you, he promised me directly that he will give you the lowest price you can find in the market. He will give you the best price that's available. And that's on silver, which is at a 5,000 year, cheapest in 5,000 years. So it's just crazy. And if there isn't a good time to buy with all the crap going on, and if you have any extra money, I think by diversifying and getting into precious metals, getting a little bit of silver, I like silver because it's not that expensive. If you have to spend $15 to $18 to $2,000 just to get gold, well, you know, a little coin. But with silver, most people can afford to get a little bit of that. And you can also get into cryptocurrencies. But just want to tell you, silver, look into silver right now. Again, andy@milesfranklin.com, and tell him that Sarah sent you, and he promises me that you will get the best price on the market. And before we get into this really important interview, I want to tell you, also sign up for my newsletter at sarahwestall.com, because the censorship is going through the roof. They have agendas, and if we don't agree with their whatever narrative they have going on, they will censor us. They've already shut down all my monetization on YouTube. And I don't know how long we have on other platforms. I'm hoping their mindset changes before they shut us down. We don't know. But just to be safe, please sign up for my newsletter, because I don't think they can take email away from us. And this information is so important. So also, you know, I'm on BitChute and Library and other places. So if YouTube decides to be dumb and turn off our voices, you can get it at other places. I'm also on in audio form on all sorts of platforms on my podcast, and it has been rated in in most Western countries, in the top 20 and top 10, even number one in Switzerland a couple weeks ago. So I'm really, other people in other countries are listening, and so I'm really proud of that. So please sign up for my newsletter at sarahwestall.com. Let's get into this important interview with Dr. Joe Nieuwsma. Hi, Dr. Joe. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, Sarah. It's very nice to be back.
Well, the world has spiraled kind of out of control. And I mean, it's not funny. It's you have to laugh at times, because otherwise you're just going to go insane, I think. And I did a tweet this weekend that is actually gone viral. I didn't even include anybody, no hashtags, no pictures. I even spelled something wrong. And I was just so frustrated. It was about my experience of not wanting to put on a mask at Menards. And I just had it. And I came home and I was so frustrated. And I just did this tweet. I never usually just share my feelings like that. And I just did it. I thought, you know what, maybe I'll get 6 people to retweet. I mean, literally, it's at about 8,000 retweets. 700 and some thousand people have seen it. I think I really hit a nerve, because a lot of people feel the same way. So I want to talk about, you know, since we're going to cover myths and misinformation, which is everywhere, coming from the top two, as we know, let's talk about masks first, because I kind of did that this weekend. And so I want to know.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I'll tell you where I lie. And just in case people don't remember who the heck I am, Dr. Joe, I have a PhD in toxicology and 30 years experience in human exposure to pharmaceuticals, to chemical agents, and biologicals. So it's been my life's work keeping people safe and finding better ways to do things. So with that background, I'm a never masker. I will not put on a mask.
And let's explain
and
that.
The reason for that is it's Dr. Judy Minkovich, who she and I shared an interview with you just a little while ago, and she said it very succinctly, that the only thing the masks do is amplify your own infection. If you have one, if you have viral infection in your nose and your mouth, having that mask on recirculates that, and it goes deeper into your systems and could gain a foothold on your body. Exposure doesn't necessarily mean disease unless you provide a pathway to give an amplification of that virus, and wearing a mask is going to do that with the viral particles that don't get away from you. And also, the masks have pores in them that the average size is about the same size as a virus. So the best analogy that I've heard, it's not mine, I'm passing it on, is that if you were to put your face up against a chain link fence, the chain link fence represents your mask, and the viruses are coming straight on through. So everything gets out, everything gets in. The fact of the matter is that the mask isn't going to help you. The mask isn't going to help anyone else around you. And it's all been a popularized decision for politicians to feel like they're making a difference. That's all it is.
How about the N95 mask or something like that, or 95 mask for people in the hospital? Does that help them at all?
In the hospital setting, all the rules change, because the masks are designed to be there. It's not a cloth handkerchief. It's not a mask made out of somebody's pair of jeans. It's not somebody's boxer shorts that don't fit them anymore. It is a specifically designed with specifications for pore size and for blockage to keep certain things out. And in the healthcare setting, all the rules are different. So my opinion is, for like walking into Menards, walking into Home Depot, going on an airplane, you know, it's if you cover your mouth when you sneeze, you're going to be better off.
Well, masks that Menards were selling weren't up to standard anyways. And no one was wearing a mask that actually wasn't like your chain link fence. And what I understand, it also restricts oxygen for you, which makes...
Yes, that's true. There's a...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a large basis of scientific data that shows the rebreathing of higher and higher and higher concentrations of expelled carbon dioxide. It contributes to chronic fatigue syndrome. And if we don't think we're getting enough rest already and that we're walking around irritable because we haven't been able to do what we wanted to do for the last 8 weeks, well, now let's deprive ourselves of oxygen and add that to the heap of something else you got to carry around. So, you know, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say people wearing masks, they're more than 6 feet, they wear it outside, which seems ridiculous, you know, because it's better to breathe in that fresh air.
It is.
They're wearing it in the sun.
It is.
They're wearing it in their car.
When they're by themselves.
When they're by themselves in their car. I've seen a lot of people do that. It's worse for them.
Yeah.
Okay, well, okay, so that's our first myth. Masks. Let's move on to information and disinformation that's been going on about the antibody tests. Okay. And it's kind of coupled with they have not been able to narrow down the virus. Let's start with first, have they been able to narrow down that? We know that the coronavirus is a family of viruses, right? Have they been able to specifically narrow down the COVID-19 and the fact that it's mutated? Are they able to narrow down the strand that's in your area or the strand that's in the United States enough to be able to check for antibodies? And we can talk about why antibodies, the details of antibodies later, but have they been able to do that?
It is my opinion right now, and I haven't read everything available, but it is my opinion that they know enough about this sequence to know when they're dealing with COVID-19 versus SARS-CoV-2 or SARS-CoV, the various different strains of coronavirus. I think they have currently the technology to discern those from their sequencing data. And I've pointed to the one paper that talks about the 12 base pairs that were inserted into that. That's the Fuhrer in the S link that absolutely proves to me beyond all shadow of a doubt that this is an engineered virus and a bioweapon.
Exactly.
And if that's the case, then they know the entire sequence. So I feel like the entire sequence is known.
And even if it's mutated, they still have that sequence so they can narrow it down.
Correct. Because a mutation can be very simple, very, very little effect, one base pair, one nucleoside, those types of things. Or it could be a mutation in a larger chunk, or it could be either one. So to say mutation, it's kind of like it's very nonspecific. Does that make sense?
Yes, I agree. Okay, so then let's talk about, so they have been able to narrow down the virus, because I think it's misinformation that they haven't. Now, whether they're putting it in their tests and everything, okay, that's to be, we know that certain tests were tainted with the virus. We know that certain tests weren't very high quality. We've already talked about that. I also posted an article showing that the CDC, the feds confirmed that the first batch of CDC tests were actually tainted with the coronavirus. So that's all out there, okay? But that being said, they have been able to narrow it down. Now, is it possible to check for the antibodies for it? Because what people are saying is that you can't, the IgG antibody is the most abundant antibody that we create. So it's always going to get false positives, but that's not really true, right? Because there's specifics about that IgG. So can you talk about that?
Correct. Yes. The immune system is made up of many different cell types, and an immunoglobulin is just a different cell type. And you have all of the white blood cells which lead into making these immunoglobulins. And the immunoglobulins, the IgG and the IgM, have very specific functions in the immune system. And the antibodies are a structure that they consist of four different subsets that are linked together by specific biochemical properties, if you will. So what you have is you have, if you look at, like if you're thinking about fingers, you have a light chain, a heavy chain, a heavy chain, and a light chain. And the bottom part of these fingers would be very conserved regions in the antibody, and these top parts would be what varies. Now, the very conserved regions of an antibody give the instructions of what that antibody does for the person's immune system. And then the variable parts are what allows the body to remember what antigen it's specific for. And so that's for the specific type of immune reaction. You have an immediate immune reaction that kills foreign invaders. And then you have a delayed immune reaction, which grabs the antigens from those foreign invaders and makes, if you will, here's a reference to say my age, a library card for it. So it goes in the card catalog so that the immune system will remember that, oh, I've been exposed to this before, pulls out that card, or for the people nowadays, pulls out that page from Google and says, this is how we need to fight this. We need to make this molecule very, very quickly. And then the bottom part of that antibody comes back into play that gets the immune system to make that antibody to attack that foreign invader. And it's the part, it's the antigen. They actually call it a hapten. The hapten is the piece or a fragment of protein that comes from the foreign invader that gets presented to the immune system, and the immune system grabs that and makes a file of it so that it can make that again very, very quickly on any subsequent infection. So it's based on what the test is looking for. If it's part of that antibody in that very specific region, then it can be a very good and very specific antibody test. If it's something that's not specific to the antigen and you're looking at the conserved regions of the antibodies, then you're going to get a lot more false positives because every IgG in the body is going to have that sequence. Does that make sense?
It does to me. And that's why if you have a good antibody test, it does work. Now, some of the concerns, and I actually agree with these people, but I have mixed feelings on this. I want to get an antibody test because I want to know that I had it. And I can see right. Businesses wanting antibody tests because they want to get back to work. I mean, God, I mean, right. We are destroying people's lives. But then there's this other side, which is, yeah, but now you're going to make it so that everybody's going to have some kind of antibody card or vaccine. And that scares the hell out of me, right? I mean, that is, but that gets to your ADA statement that you found.
Right. Yes, I did. And I did find an ADA statement, and that goes back to the
I'm putting that sucker up here.
To the mask. Yeah, and I sent it to you so you can share it.
We're going
to
put it up.
But it goes back to the mask wearing, and it says that, I don't have to put on a mask because it causes some sort of a reaction in me, and by ADA standards, I don't have to disclose those medical conditions to you, and if you make me do this, then it's an ADA violation, of which businesses for the first violation are fined $75,000 and subsequent violations are fined $150,000. How many businesses are going to tell somebody to wear a mask if they get slapped with a $75,000 fine every time they tell somebody to do that? I don't think very many people are going to go down that road.
And they'd have to change the ADA requirements for forcing you to do some kind of antibody or vaccine tag too, right? I mean, it's the same thing.
Right. Exactly. And it's just, you know, the more I think about it, I moved into a new house and I closed right before Halloween. And I was so sick the day of closing. And I go back and I think about those symptoms. I'm like, gosh, I had extreme fatigue and I had a massive headache. But could it have been the coronavirus? I don't know. I wrote it off as a 24-hour bug. But, you know, I'm generally fat and healthy. So if something comes along, I can maybe fight that off. I certainly don't have any respiratory issues. So maybe it was. Maybe an antibody test would show something about what I had.
Yeah. And
I don't know. And but so, you got to be a good one.
Has to be good. But the other thing is, you don't want to share it with anybody. You want it to be private. It does scare me. And I can see why people are scared of this overreach.
You need it to be private.
Yeah, we need to be private. And so I get everybody's concerns over it. I do. I just, you know, and so I just wanted to ask about this antibody because I think there's so much disinformation out there and it's just driving me nuts. Okay, let's move on to the next one here. Let's talk about the illness that it's not even a virus. It's an exosome and they're not contagious. People are saying viruses. I mean, I've had people say viruses don't exist and they're not contagious. And then I've had people say it's an exosome and it's not contagious. So can we talk about the virus not existing and not being contagious and it being, talk about both the topics. I don't even know what to say about the virus not existing comment because I mean, it just does, but maybe you have something smart to say along those lines.
Well, you got to understand what an exosome is. And an exosome is really a biochemical tool, maybe even a cellular tool for moving bits and pieces of cellular machinery around. It could be enzymes, could be proteins, could be genetic material. And basically what it is a cell will kick this equipment into its own little membraned bleb and then break it off and send that to wherever it wants it to go in the nucleus, in the cytosol, cell-to-cell communication or whatever. So as far as the fact that you have cellular material and you have genetic material, can it be infectious? The answer is yes. Can it be determined that it's triggering positives in these antibody tests? The answer is yes. Because if you're making a test for a certain genetic sequence, and that genetic sequence is found in the virus, but also in an exosome, then you're going to get a positive result every time that sequence is hit. So the possibility that the exosome plays a role in all this, yeah, it's possible. But the fact of the matter is that the virus has infected so many, and there are serious effects in some people. The viral nature of how quickly and how efficiently it goes from person to person to person, that lends me to believe that it's the viral particles and not some subcellular fraction of biochemical machinery like an exosome. So I don't buy into the exosome theory that it's really just an exosome and not a virus, because there's too much evidence out there to suggest that the virus exists and it's real and it's very virulent and it's very infectious.
And this virus does not behave like a normal coronavirus. They're not this contagious. So that's another reason why we think it's a bioweapon, right? Because they just don't act like this.
And it's been tuned to infect people, and it was tuned to affect people at the receptor that they chose. You know, the ACE2 receptor, the angiotensin converting enzyme 2 receptor, that's all over your nasal tract, all over your airways, and even it's all over your vasculature. So now there's a leading theory that the chronic inflammation created by the virus is causing the inflammation in the vessels, which is causing the blood to clot. And that's a coagulation disorder. And that's the newest theory, that it's those blood clots that can go to major organs like lungs and heart that could kill somebody very quickly with, and if it goes to the brain, you know, it's a stroke. So you have embolism and stroke added to the now list of the way the coronavirus can kill you. And it's still due to inflammation and inability of the body to control that inflammation reaction. So it's still the cytokine storm, and it's still the recruitment of those immune cells, and it's massive inflammation. But the virus is doing that same thing in different tissues and in different organs. And I don't think an exosome would do that at all.
So that's great. Okay, so it starts to dispel that area. It's not, people aren't necessarily, some of the people talking about aren't purposely giving this information. They just might be misinformed. And then I also think they massively put information out in the independent media to make people look like they don't know what they're talking about. I think it's on purpose. It's a combination. And then well-meaning people who might be pretty intelligent and really good in one area, but just not necessarily in the science. Okay, so let's talk about Let's talk about hydroxychloroquine and this. They say that it has too many side effects to be used effectively. And in fact, I just got a quote from a doctor. He tweeted it, and I'm going to see if I can find it so I can put it up while we're doing the show. He says, I don't understand this stuff with remdesivir and all these other things and hydrochloroquine not being talked about because it's... I've treated 30 patients. They all lived and they all recovered because I used it. I mean, those are the kind of messages these doctors are going nuts because they just are like, what the hell is going on here? What are your thoughts on all that?
Exactly. I've heard that that hydroxychloroquine used everywhere else in the world is having fantastic results, greater than 90% success rates with patients recovering and making faster recoveries. But in the United States, the only thing we hear about is the one study that was done in veterans that had a couple more side effects than the control group. So they have put the kibosh on hydroxychloroquine in the States. And they issued the press release through the FDA saying that the hydroxychloroquine isn't the wonder drug that it was supposed to be. And, you know, I don't know if it's hydroxychloroquine that has a direct effect on the virus. I still think that it's a zinc ionophore, which opens the door. Zinc comes in, inhibits that replicase enzyme, and that is the key player. But as far as the other antivirals, the remdesivir, that's a Gilead Science drug that's still on patent, I believe. So there, what that means is that there's no generic equivalent of that one. And
they'll make a killing.
The generic, yeah.
Exactly. And does it work as well?
Gilead Science will make a killing.
Yes.
Yes. And it's an antiviral. So antivirals as a class attack the machinery of how a virus replicates or where it gets its stuff to replicate or how it gets out of a cell. And there's specific points in the viral replication pathway that are drug targets. I don't know specifically where this one is targeted, but it's like I said in an early show, the very first thing they do for a new virus is take all of those antiviral drugs off the shelf and test them against this virus. And if there's any activity, then they say, let's try this drug. And that's probably what happened here. I'm not super familiar with the literature on this one, but I mean, if it does work and save somebody's life, great. Let's use it. Let's add it to the repertoire, but let's not necessarily cross off something else that also works.
Well, it's like use hydroxychloroquine because it's effective 90% of the time. And then if that doesn't seem like it's working, then get to the other one. That's what it seems like to me.
Exactly. A tiered approach, yeah, which is what they do in every other disease state.
And the people who have pretty strong immune systems, you can give them hydroxychloroquine to help kick it quicker. From when my husband's cousin in Mexico got that. He didn't even go into the doctor. The doctor says, oh, it sounds like you have coronavirus because he was in New York. He gave him hydroxychloroquine. Within 3 days, he felt better and he was on his way and that was it. I mean, it was so different in Mexico. In the United States, they treat you like you're a prisoner of war. And there, they're just like, whatever, let's do what's right.
Well, I can tell you the difference.
Go ahead.
In the United States, there's this organization called the FDA that is owned and operated by the pharma lobby.
Yeah, and it's all about making sure those big pharma companies get they squeeze everything out of that patent that they can. Even if there's
exactly.
Something that's better for people.
Exactly.
That's out there, which is just ridiculous.
Yep.
Okay. Well, and then let's get back to now the combination of how many people we're saving lives through this lockdown. Okay. My thinking is so many of these people, if you really focus on building up your immune system and you take things like C60 that can work with decreasing inflammation.
Absolutely.
And all the free radicals and then build up your immune system by just being healthy. And then you have, the hydroxychloroquine for anybody who really doesn't have that strong, or, you know, they're older. They're older. A lot of people, you just get older and you have it. There's a 101-year-old that had a good enough immune system to fight it off. But still, then you can bring in the hydroxychloroquine. And so the death rate here, if you actually did these things, even if you didn't care about your immune system, And you just did the hydroxychloroquine because they're not even focusing on the immune system, which is sad. But let's say that's all you did. There's how many people are going to die from this? Very few, right? I mean, are we saving any lives?
Well, the, it's it it's it becomes a numbers analysis. And this description, I always say, if you or somebody you know and love is one of the people that are severely affected or die, that sucks. No way around it.
Absolutely.
But in a society, you need to put the needs of the many over the needs of the few. And with this lockdown, we're specifically looking at the needs of the few over the needs of the many. And that is a philosophical argument that I just can't buy into. Both my parents are in risk groups, being 81 years old, and one of them having lung deficiency. But what you need to do is you take the extra measures to protect those at risk. I think I said this two or three interviews back that the quarantine stuff is crazy. You don't need to do it. Protect your high-risk groups. As the numbers are coming out, the death rate isn't near what they thought it was. It's going to be less than 1% for sure. And I recently pulled an article off of LinkedIn that talked about a university study. I don't remember the university, but you can get it off my website, superiortoxicology.com. It's just more death is what I said. And that talks about the fact that the deaths from drug overdose and suicide have now surpassed the deaths that were saved from the COVID virus by 41% due to the quarantine and lockdown practices. People are dying more because we aren't allowed to do what we're supposed to do to exist and provide than if they had gotten the virus with no quarantine activity. So I think that's completely irresponsible.
And that's just
Go ahead.
suicides and drug overdose,
And
which is,
drug overdose.
that's not
Yes.
counting the children all over the world from the global recession and child abuse that die from starvation and everything else. That's not talking about the increased stress and the cardiovascular problems that people are going to have because they're unemployed, their lives are destroyed because of losing their businesses. I had Dr. Wolfson on, the cardiologist, and he was telling me this. He's saying, he quoted the UN, which he said he didn't like quoting the UN, but he's going to take it. Hundreds of thousands of children, over 200,000 children worldwide will die when you go into recession. How many children have died from COVID-19? I don't even think you can count it on one hand worldwide. So,
Very
okay.
few, yeah,
Yeah.
very few. So it's just it's it, and then all of these local and the local governments and the state governments that are coming out now, 8 weeks after the fact, saying it's mandatory to put on masks if you're going to be in Denver. It's mandatory to put on masks if you're going to be in Boulder or get on a bus or go to any store. It's stupid, Sarah.
I know.
I can't say it any other
I
more
know.
succinctly, but
I've been.
it's the popular decision that's just taking on a mob mentality. And I can't be a voice of reason to more people that it's not the way to do it. Absolutely, 100% not the way to do it.
And, I've been. I told Max said something. He texted me something and said, "You can't fix stupid." And I said, "I think they're just they're programmed." And he goes, "Well, I didn't mean to say it that way." And I go, "I'm just said I've just been calling people
Yes, he did.
stupid." I said, "I yeah, he did. I've just been calling people stupid all last week." And I got my son says, "Sarah, mom, you can't sit there and call people stupid." And I'm thinking, God, but it is stupid. And so I told him, well, I'm just working on it. So that's why I didn't call it
Yeah.
stupid. So, I mean,
I'm trying to
I.
call the decisions that are made stupid as opposed to the people making the decisions.
Exactly.
But if it was my decision, I wouldn't make that one. So,
If the decisions are
and the
clearly
proof is now
stupid.
coming out. The science is showing that more people are dying because of the draconian distancing practices to try to save lives from the virus. I mean, it's time to cut bait.
You get to the point where, are they just seeking power? Are they just seeking control? I mean, we know the answers to this, right? And it's, some of these people are well-meaning and they might not be making smart decisions. They might be a little on the dumb side. It's just not productive to constantly call everybody stupid, but the decisions clearly are. It's crazy.
It's divisive.
Okay, and then let's go to the next. Let's go to the next one here. Let's talk about this without saying the word stupid. Let's say dumb. Let's talk about this dumb vaccine that they claim they're going to have. They were saying fall, and now they're saying winter. What is the likelihood that not only will they have a vaccine out by then, but that it will be effective and safe?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I'm not going to take it. I'm not going to subject that to my body. It's, you got to understand vaccines. In the middle 80s, all culpability was removed from pharmaceutical companies for every vaccine developed after the middle of the 80s. There has not been a blind controlled study done on a vaccine since that time. All of these vaccines that have horrible reactions that you hear about, those people are paid off from the government. That means you and me, not pharmaceutical companies. That's why vaccines exploded after the middle 80s. A baby born today, if they get every vaccine on the slate the best way I heard that was to make up for the creator's deficiencies, there's 72 vaccines that a baby needs to get the day they're born. That's crazy, Sarah. Absolutely crazy. And this one that's been developed in this amount of time, there isn't any time to do controlled studies. There isn't any time to watch for adverse events in large populations. I mean, this is driven by the people that own the patent to the vaccine. And that's the whole concept of mass vaccination, because there's a few little people that are going to get massively wealthy. And vaccines are not a good thing.
But it gets back to our stupid comment. Now, the likelihood of it having an incredibly poor effect is very, very high. So they would put out a mass amount of vaccines. They've never had a vaccine less than 5 years, from what I understand. It's taken at least 5 years for any vaccine. You know, Ebola, I guess they did, and they had major problems with that at first. And so they're going to try to do it in a lot less time than they ever done before. It's incredibly stupid, because all they're going to do, likelihood, very high probability, hurt a lot of people and have a huge backlash put on them. They can't get sued, so I guess they don't care, huh?
Exactly. And I'll tell you why. The immune system of the body is set up with compartments. You have a compartment inside the body. You have a compartment in your airway. You have a compartment in your liver. You have a compartment in your skin. The skin is the barrier to 99% of the things you're exposed to by living. The skin. A vaccine takes this bacteria or the virus, you know, it's killed or attenuated, whatever it is, but it takes the disease and puts it in a needle through your skin into the inside. So every single vaccine bypasses the immune system's best defense in the compartment of the skin. So how can you say injecting somebody with disease is going to make them more healthy and better? I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, it gets back to just being pretty stupid. Okay, now.
I mean, there was a lot of good work done with vaccines early. Polio, smallpox, you know, some of the MMR stuff that was first, you know, measles, mumps, and rubella. But then after the 80s, where they generated all these vaccines for everything under the sun.
Well, that's even worse.
That's crazy.
Well, they even have evidence that some of those initial vaccines had a lot more problems and weren't quite what they were saying they were.
It goes along with the argument where I made with COVID. If you or someone you love is one of the people that's severely affected, that sucks. It just then the greater good for some of those things, the analysis is okay, the population can handle this. But then you get things like Gardasil, and that's just it's ridiculous. The cost benefit analysis doesn't add up. And now you get these rapid fast-tracked vaccines with a bad track record for the people that are making them, and they want to put this into everybody on the face of the earth. That's a red flag for me.
Yeah, it should be a red flag for everybody that's out there, everyone. And I understand the argument that you should never be forced to take any vaccine, even if it's for the general good, because we should have rights over our own bodies. I mean, all that stuff. So even if there is a vaccine that supposedly works good, you should not be forced to take it, period. And the p other people who are
Correct.
taking it, well, they're safe anyways because they took it, right? So go ahead, knock yourself out. Okay, let's talk about the China death rate. Because one thing that happened is when we first co started covering it, I started covering it because I was covering Wuhan. Wuhan was one scary situation. The death rate was way more. I mean, they're lying about it. We had intel people telling us all this stuff. It was contagious. People were dropping dead on the streets. We were getting bad information. Well, we're getting bad information all around on what was going on. The Lancet was putting out high infection rate, the WHO, everybody was. But it turned out that it was not just the virus. It was their pollution, it was 5G, and it was the CCP just taking people out. So us that were covering it, we were freaking out because we were like, oh my God, if this thing is really what's happening, we have to protect ourselves. So I was covering it, and I almost feel I kind of helped create a little bit of that panic up front because we were lied to, but then aren't we were lied to also by, and I'm going to go there because our intelligence and our people knew that this was not just the virus. They should have came out and said, there's more going on here. The cover up of the pollution and the 5G and the CCP taking people out made it so that we would be more scared that this virus was barreling down on us. So, what are your thoughts on comparing Wuhan, where millions of people died, to what we really are experiencing today with what actually hit us? I mean, who, what, go
What I
ahead.
think, Sarah, what I think is that you're absolutely right with the whole picture approach to what was going on. And the common denominator with the things that you mentioned is that, like the 5G, it depletes cellular defense mechanisms, just like the virus does, and just like the other things that you mentioned, with the exception of the Chinese Communist Party just taking people out. That's high velocity lead poisoning is. Kind of sucks. But the thing that I think is going on in this country is the virus and the mutations of the virus that hit our shores and went across our country. I think it's been going on longer than what they are letting on. I think that there's a lot more people that have had minor illnesses that are COVID, kind of like when I was closing on my house at Halloween. And I think that there's more community immunity already built up for this, that over 99% of the people that get this virus are still going to be on this rock when this virus is out of their system. And I think that had people been up front and said, this is what we know, as opposed to what actually happened, I think the panic would be less. I don't think the media would have had a carte blanche permission to create the absolute fear and terrorism propaganda drive that they did.
Because their information
Right.
was wrong. Their
Exactly.
information was wrong. The Lancet was wrong. The WHO was wrong. I mean, all the most prestigious journals, medical journals in the world were wrong.
Yes. And maybe the first month of quarantine flattened the curve enough and squelched that outbreak. Maybe not. We'll never know.
I doubt
it. If the virus that hit our shores wasn't as virulent as what was going on in Wuhan, then we're talking about two separate things. But I still think the draconian quarantine could have been handled differently. You take care of your high-risk populations, and you keep business as usual, and then you don't have the drug overdose, the cardiovascular issues, and the suicides to deal with that are competing for the amount of deaths in the virus. Because if you think about it, you know, the government says, we're going to give you $1,200. Well, what if it costs $8,000 a month to be you? You know, you got car payments, you got house payments, you got phone payments, you got food payments, and here's your $1,200. Stay home for the next 8 weeks. You know, a lot of people get very desperate in times like that because there's a subset of the population that lives paycheck to paycheck. And if you eliminate a paycheck, there is no safety net for those folks. And you can't just say, here's $1,200. I hope you make it, and not have any backup plan, because especially when the numbers are now proving out that what they put the people through wasn't justified, in my opinion.
Well, and if we just let the young people, I mean, young, maybe 50 and younger, I mean, you don't even have to have an army, just anybody who believes they have a good immune system.
Exactly.
Go out, get it. In fact, we want you to get it so that we have all these antibodies floating around out there, and it'll be safer for the people who do have a weaker immune system. And then they won't have these issues.
Yes. And of course, the criticism that we're going to face is that you guys are looking at this in the rearview mirror. Hindsight's always 2020.
You said it right from the
start.
That's
what you're going to say.
You said it day one. So BS. And then we said it the next, we reiterated it the next time that you came on. I said, you nailed it right off the bat, that they are not focusing on the right population. They should be doing it this way and whatever. You also nailed, as soon as we had the Stanford study, we went on air and you talked about the hydroxychloroquine, how it worked exactly. You were way ahead of everybody and why it was effective. So they can't tell us that we are in the hind, you know, the rear view mirror. As soon as I learned more about Wuhan, I was upfront about that as well. I even had people.
Exactly.
Yeah. We were talking about what was going on with the CCP. We were getting that information out there. But the thing that pisses me off is that they knew it. They have their intel agents. They knew it and they kept it from us. That's what
they kept propagating the disinformation is what they did.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so if they cared about saving lives, saving our country, saving our economy. And the reason why saving our economy is so important is because it saves so many lives and so many livelihoods. And if they actually cared about people, we would not be sitting in this lockdown situation. Period.
That's correct.
Okay, so how do people get hold of you and get your information and what you do? To tell us what you do again, because what you do is amazing. Everyone should know about you, especially if they have relatives that are on cocktails of drugs and it's killing them.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. My company is Superior Toxicology and Wellness. And what I like to do is I like to give people control of their own wellness and well-being back. My program is called HOPE, Health, Optimization, Prescription, Evaluation. And what I do is I give you the time that no physician has to give you to go through your complete medical profile and the drug products that you're on. When you feel like you're on so many drugs and spiraling downhill that you're losing quality of life and there's nothing you can do for it, I can help you. I look at your drug history, why you're on it, how long you've been on it, and what you think it's doing for you. And I come up with very specific recommendations for you to take back to your healthcare provider and get some hard answers as to why these drug products are still in your profile. And you can get to that by going to superiortoxicology.com and clicking on the HOPE button. And that's where I help people to get off of those drug products. And a lot of my recommendations include natural products. And one of those that I absolutely love is called C60 Complete. It's the world's best antioxidant. It squelches all oxidative stress in your body, and it's formulated with black seed oil and curcumin. And those two products are very good at being organ protective, at being anti-inflammatory, at being anti-cancer, at being antibiotic and antiviral. It boosts your immune system so that your body can naturally fight off foreign invaders like this coronavirus or even the common cold or flu virus and everything else. So those are the two things that I like to talk about when you ask me that question.
Well, my dad feels like it's almost a miracle thing for him because he had so many breathing issues and phlegm in his lungs, and I'm telling you, he feels so much. Now he's this, I couldn't even get him to use it for about a year. And then he started using it. And now he's evangelizing over it, you know? So it's, I'm so happy he started using it because it's made such a difference.
Yes. And both of my parents are 81 years old and they're getting fabulous results with his lung conditions and mom's knee replacement. It's they love it. And every time I put it on my website, it's immediately shared through their entire community. So, yeah,
well,
it's
great.
A wonderful product.
Well, thank you so much, Joe. Thanks for everything that you do and everything that you will continue to do, because we are so blessed to have someone like you out there. So great.
I appreciate the invite and coming on the show. And anytime, Sarah, I'll try to help you as best I can. And, you know, if I don't know for sure, I'll give you my opinion. And we can always go from there. We'll see what people have to say about it.